The economic summit is over with mixed reviews for President Reagan. He won praise for his attempts to reopen the dialogue with the Soviets, but lost points on another issue. The other leaders feistily insisting that U.S. deficits are threatening a worldwide economic recovery. What did the summit accomplish? We'll ask the head of the State Department's European desk, Richard Burt. Is President Reagan's image improving in Europe? We'll ask three journalists from Britain, France, and Germany. America and her allies, an issue facing the nation.
From CBS News, London, Face the Nation, with White House correspondent Leslie Stahl.
They call it an economic summit, but this year the leaders of the industrialized world put the issue of war and peace, of arms control and U.S.-Soviet relations at the top of the agenda. Outside, anti-nuclear demonstrators throng London's streets and parks.
We don't want foreign weapons on our country. Let us fight for our own country, our own children, our own grandchildren. Tell Reagan to go.
Inside the summit, the leaders agree to a joint statement calling for a speedy resumption of arms talks, a statement endorsing President Reagan's new tone of conciliation.
It was the Soviet Union that walked out of the nuclear disarmament talks. The United States has indicated that she will go back to the table without preconditions, and we hope to get some response.
There was a lone dissenter.
And if you're looking at subtleties, you've got a point. It's not the best way to get them to the table, to sort of say, you guys, you're too late.
The mood of the summit was friendly. These leaders say they genuinely like Ronald Reagan. But still, they criticized him for U.S. deficits and high interest rates. The leaders did agree to measures to control the crushing third world debt and to a plan to combat state-controlled terrorism. This morning, just before he left London, the president was asked about the demonstrators who followed him on this trip, both in Ireland and here in Britain.
They seem to think they have a simple answer to warfare, that if we just lay down our weapons and stand back empty-handed, that somehow peace will come to the world. They haven't stopped to figure it might be the peace of the grave.
With us now is Assistant Secretary of State Richard Burt. Mr. Burt, what is the single most important outcome, in your opinion, of this summit?
I think the most important outcome was the overall sense of confidence projected by the leaders this week in London, both on the economic side, a continuation of policies that have worked, working to bring down inflation, to open the international trading system, and on the political side, strong statements on East-West relations, the Gulf, and the conflict between Iran and Iraq, and a real political commitment on terrorism. In other words, I think they projected a sense that the world's major industrial democracies can master the problems we face today.
Well, you say that, and that was, in fact, the message of the communique that was put out. And yet, after these things are over, we begin to hear stories about dissension inside, that the leaders did, in fact, criticize Ronald Reagan for U.S. deficits and interest rates, for example. Well, that it's not, in other words, not as unified as you say.
Well, I think the statements and I think the overall sense of this summit was unity and solidarity. In fact, that word shows up quite frequently in the documents. Of course, there were debates and disagreements. It wouldn't have been a real summit. It wouldn't have been a real give and take if there hadn't been differences.
Well, the one thing that did seem to be concrete was this statement on terrorism. We understand that there were some secret agreements. Can you give us any clue as to what was said that is not written down in the communique?
Well, I think the first thing to say is that you don't want to say too much in public about this problem. It is, after all, a very serious security problem. We're concerned about combating terrorism, particularly state-supported terrorism, countries like Iran and Iraq and Libya, and how they have helped terrorists in the past. What we want to do, if we can, is establish a small group of experts representing each of these countries. They will try to implement the various agreements in this statement, such as trying to limit arms sales, trying to bring forward new legislation, exchanging intelligence,
Well, I think the big question is whether the Western world has now decided that preemptive strikes, when this shared intelligence shows that a terrorist attack is coming, whether this group is prepared to launch a preemptive strike against a state that we think might be planning some terrorist
attack. No, I know that's a very controversial question, and I don't think you can make a basic or general decision on that. I think it depends on a case-by-case basis. I don't think we would ever rule that out. There are certain circumstances where I think just common reason would lead you to consider that option. I think that the fact that these leaders are now taking this problem seriously, they're prepared to have their foreign ministers address it in the future, is a good sign.
There does seem to be a sense that the leaders, anyway, I don't want to speak for the peoples of all these countries, but that the leaders are coming closer together. What is happening in the world, do you think, that's causing this?
I think one thing is that they have a chance to meet at these summits. They get to know one another. Ronald Reagan has established a very close relationship with Prime Minister Thatcher, for example, and Chancellor Kohl. So these summits at least have the virtue of allowing these people to establish some confidence. But there are some international reasons that they are reaching agreement. I think there's a concern about the East-West situation. And as a result, there's a consensus that in addition to being firm, maintaining the military balance, that we should seek a real dialogue with the Soviet Union. And if you look at that East-West statement, for example, they endorse the president's position of going back to the negotiating table anywhere, any place, without preconditions. There is, I think, a real desire to be reasonable with the Soviets, and I think you see that consensus. There's a recognition that Western interests are affected or could be vastly affected by the Iran-Iraq conflict. So I think these events, these objective factors in the international system, the Soviet behavior, the conflict in Iran and Iraq, terrorism, are leading people to reach a consensus on the major issues. And we think that's an important development.
How do you square the strong impression that this summit tried to put out, that the alliance is closer together, with all these demonstrations we had? When Ronald Reagan went to Ireland, they demonstrated. He came to London. There were demonstrations here. The Dutch have now said they are going to postpone putting the missiles in. The Danish government says it's not going to pay its share for the American missiles in Europe. It seems to be going apart in another way.
Well, no, I think that there's always been a lot of debate and dissension in the West on a lot of these issues, and that's a very healthy thing. We shouldn't forget one of the products of this summit was this declaration on democratic values. You know, you can have these kinds of demonstrations in the West. You can't have those demonstrations in the East. But I would just point out the demonstrations here in London yesterday, for instance, were far smaller than they were a year ago when people were debating the deployment of cruise missiles here. The demonstrations, I think, all through Europe are much smaller than they were a year ago. And I think public opinion polls demonstrate there's far less concern about nuclear weapons issues now than there was a year ago. And I think that's because the public feels that their leaders are making an honest effort to reach some kind of reconciliation with the Soviet Union. It's the Soviets that seem to be on the defensive.
They're finally. A lot has been written about how this trip was in part designed to help President Reagan in his campaign. Do you think it'll help?
I can't say that, but what I can say is that it certainly helped U.S. foreign policy in Europe. I think there's a better understanding of what the president is trying to do, and I think there's now a sense of overall agreement between the United States and the key European leaders on what the key policies we must pursue in both the economic and political area in the years ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Burt. Joining us now are three journalists, one from Britain, one from France, and one from Germany. Gentlemen, President Reagan has been viewed in Europe over the past 3.5 years with a certain degree of mistrust. I know in the press he's often referred to as a cowboy, and there are always references to his acting career. And yet, with the American economic recovery and the president's new rhetoric calling on the Soviets to come back to the arms talks, we were wondering if there's been a shift in public opinion toward him and perhaps a change in his image. Peter Jenkins, your political editor of The Guardian, what about British public opinion?
I think people are very slow here to grasp the fact that President Reagan is a very successful president in the eyes of many Americans, that he is a popular, well-liked president, and that the way things look, he's going to get re-elected, and perhaps re-elected quite big this autumn. British look at him, and as you say, they do think of him as a kind of B-movie actor. They couldn't quite realize how it had happened that he had become president of the United States. And then, of course, during the first part of his administration, I think people did feel that he was more interested in rearmament than he was in organizing peace.
But has there been a change?
It's a slow change, and I think that when somebody like Rick Burt comes on a program like this and says, the president equally wants the United States to be strong and have a dialogue, well, okay, that is the policy now, but that wasn't the policy at the beginning, and European opinion and British opinion is being slow to catch up with this change, I think.
Francis Cornu, your diplomatic correspondent for Le Monde. What about the French?
I just discovered an opinion poll quite amazing. Mr. Reagan is one of the most popular leader according to an opinion poll. I'm not so keen to comment about that sort of opinion poll, but it's an indication.
What you're saying is that the French say he's one of the most popular world leaders?
Much more than I thought.
Uh-huh.
And certainly I don't think it's a shift. I just think it's an evolution. There is still certainly even a lot of contempt toward him among, generally speaking, the public opinion. But I think French are getting, generally speaking, much more realistic. He's a winner, and it's not the language we had before, but it's a fact. Mr. Reagan is successful in a lot of matters now, and I think, in a way, the French people is recognizing that, even if they are not so, or most of them are not so pleased sometimes.
But don't you think if they consider him, if they say rate him in a poll as one of the leaders in the world they like the most, that it's deeper than just that he's a winner? Perhaps they even like his message.
I think it's just a proof of realism, and nothing else for the moment. And just recognizing that Mr. Reagan is coping rather well with a socialist government.
Klaus Engelin, international editor for Handelsblatt, a West German newspaper. What about the Germans?
I think the German public opinion has a lot of difficulties getting adjusted to a new president. Every time. I think they have still the idea of Kennedy in the back of their mind, particularly the younger generation. Now, the Reagan entrance a couple of years ago got them into more difficulties after Carter. So the German have maybe even more, because it's a different language. They are relying on the interpretation of journalists and other media. They have even more difficulties over time to adjust to a new figure. And I think it takes a long, long time until they understood that Mr. Reagan, the actor, was for real.
Well, you know, the governments, you heard Mr. Burt and Mrs. Thatcher said the same thing. There's Western solidarity, there's unity, we're all together, we all like each other. And outside, there are demonstrations going on. I guess what we're really trying to find out is are we more unified? Are we more together, or are we not? And I think there are mixed signals here.
And I think that there are two things which are happening simultaneously, and they're not really in contradiction. One is what we've just been talking about, that I think that opinion is perhaps, although slowly, coming to recognize that there's a bit more to Ronald Reagan than they thought, and also to approve of a policy which now puts this emphasis on dialogue with the Soviets. So that's good. But at the same time, there is a feeling in Europe that Europe is now slipping behind the United States, but having gone through a period in which per capita wealth in most of European countries approached American levels, the gap between American wealth and European wealth is now opening again. And so I think that there are different kinds of tensions, and perhaps even a little touch of envy now creeping in.
Well, hasn't, gentlemen, that always been the case, since World War II, the criticism of the United States perhaps really stems from the resentment of our power rather than the fact that you really are as critical of our policies as you express?
I think there's a basic problem between European-American relations, particularly in the case of Germany, that every pronouncement by an administration official is taken too much seriously. And in many instances, the American political process, even, you know, the little guy in the White House who is an assistant to the assistant of a president, when he says something, it's taken too serious. And therefore, there is a tremendous communication problem. And I might add another point. You know, demonstrations, let's say we talk about the last autumn, you know, the missiles and so forth in Germany. I mean, even these young people, they don't realize how American they are. There is a deep pro-American current built into our system. So in that sense, I think when you have demonstrations in Europe, we had them in Germany, particularly with large, they were peaceful, but also they were an expression of our new democracy.
But Mr. Cornu, what about the threat of anti-Americanism that developed after the war when we got all the power, we were the winners, and we sense that there's just been a contempt for us. You feel that we're not as culturally developed.
I think the situation was quite worse during the 50s, for instance, and maybe in France, because the disagreement was expressed quite strongly in the late 50s, in the 60s, under de Gaulle, of course, and he was quite popular because of anti-Americanism. I mean de Gaulle. But now it's a little bit of a thing of the past.
There's a generational effect here. I'm pretty sure, because you have the generation, what I call the class of 68. Now, these people are now growing up, but their formative experience was the United States in Vietnam. And they continue to look at an American administration, I think, to some extent anyway, through those eyes. But their other formative experience, and maybe this is more true of the Germans than it is of the English, because we have the sea separating us from the continent, but the other formative experience is of a period which we call détente. They're also the children of détente, this generation. And they just take it as an established fact that there is some kind of modus vivendi with the Soviet Union. And then all of a sudden, the Americans come along and say, no, the rules of this game have now changed again, because we don't like what the Soviets are doing worldwide. And then as Europeans see it, they say, right, and this American president is going to jeopardize what we've got going for us in Europe because of something else is happening in some other corner of the world. And that is the basis, I think, of this whole tension.
I'd like to give you an example. Let's say the public, when you have high interest rates, yeah, everybody knows that they were educated, if you have high deficits, you know, that is bad. Now there comes an administration, U.S. Secretary Reagan, he says there is no relationship between high deficits and interest rates. That is totally incredible. So what they say is, my God, are they out of their mind to have this policy? They're getting afraid, you see. So on the other side, I think there is a basic pro American current in, because they are a most important economic factor, and we have to work with them. So this summit was very important that we got adjustment and cooperation on the debt, on the LDC debt, for instance.
And in a way, the criticism is becoming normal. And it was obvious yesterday from the French delegation to with the American policy. They disagreed totally about the interest rates, but they were saying it's like that. We have to disagree, and it's a routine now.
In a federal system, the states in the United States or in Germany, in the federal states, there is a lot of disputes, a lot of struggle, you know, to get to a compromise. That's how we feel in the transatlantic relationship.
I think you can boil this down to a quite simple proposition, and that is this, that in all of the European countries, the basic sentiment is that of allies of the United States. There's no doubt as to which side we're on. This whole idea that Europe is going neutralist
is
much exaggerated in the United States. The simple proposition is this, that for us to be good allies, it is also necessary for the superpowers to be in some kind of constructive dialogue, because we live too near to the Soviet system in order to be good allies at a time when relations between the superpowers are as bad as they became during the first period of the Reagan administration.
Going back to the poll we talked about before in France, the French say that Ronald Reagan's their second most popular leader, but their third least popular is Mrs. Thatcher. She's less popular than Fidel Castro in France. Now, what does that say about Western solidarity?
Well,
I don't think it's...
I think an Iron Lady, that's maybe the point.
I think that... That the claims made at this London summit for unity are on the whole pretty much justified. That on the bigger issues, I think
they reflect the reality.
Like-minded, they're reflecting.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the document you see, you can be against these documents, but they reflect the reality as it is. And one final point I'd like to add is that a U.S. president, after he has been in office 4 years, he is an unknown quantity. So basically, the Europeans, you know, whether Reagan is this or that, they like to know where they are, with whom they have to deal with.
There's a suspicion now, isn't there, that what we're seeing now is a president running for re-election, and that when he's re-elected, he may revert to the true Ronald Reagan. Now, I don't happen to think that that will be the case, because I think that he will get sort of locked into the new policy lines that he's developing. But I think quite a few European people will reserve judgment until they see what Ronald Reagan looks like on his second inauguration day.
I think
on that
so.
Note, gentlemen, thank you very much. We'll be right back.
This is Jason Robards for the National Council on Alcoholism.
I'm Jason Robards. I'm alcoholic. There was a whole world out there that applauded me as a success. So how could I be alcoholic? I thought only losers became alcoholics. Then I found out alcoholism is a disease. And my wife convinced me that drinking for me was like committing suicide. I got the facts and got into a program to stop drinking, and I don't drink anymore. Now I really know what success is all about. Not just with my career, but with my wife, my children, and my life.
Get help like Jason Robards got. If you or someone you love has a drinking problem, call the National Council on Alcoholism in your area.
I'm living proof you don't have to die for a drink.
A public service message in cooperation with the Advertising Council.
I'm Leslie Stahl. Have a good week.